Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan. Lynn in for Lynette this week has a week off, spending some time with her family, I think in Cannon Beach, Oregon. And we both visit the same area for vacation. So
yeah,
it's a beautiful, beautiful place. Hey,
that's
Colin.
Right. But the water is still cold.
Water is still cold.
No matter what.
And a little foamier than normal this
oh,
year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. Hey, we've got some lines open for you with your medical question right now for Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, and also in studio this week, Dr. Brazel. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. I heard some talk about some new information about weight loss, Dr.
Yeah, Matt. Super excited about it. Jerry, you want to kick us off?
Okay. Well, I think we got several things. One is obviously the Ozempic and the related drugs, such as Marjuno and so. But more prosaic is some of the testing that every doctor has done for, God, what, 60, 70 years, which is just your thyroid test, your TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. TSH is a simple test. It's dirt cheap. Every doctor does it for every patient during your annual exam. And thyroid stimulating hormone is just that. It's not a thyroid hormone. It's a pituitary hormone. But it's where your pituitary gland is measuring how much thyroid hormone you've got in your bloodstream. If you need more, it raises your TSH. If you have enough, it lowers your TSH. And so people with a high TSH tend to have low amounts of thyroid in their system. People with low TSH have plenty. Well, the thyroid gland helps to regulate your metabolism. How fast your heart is beating, how tense your muscles will get, how many calories are you burning during the day? And so people with a high TSH tend to gain weight because they don't have enough thyroid hormone. High TSH means low thyroid hormone, and that means weight gain. Cold, dry, fat, tired, fuzzy-headed, you know, low everything except weight, which is going up while everything else is slowing down. The normal TSH runs from 0.4 all the way up to 5.4. So in our clinic, we generally try to keep people down around 1 because that's a good area. It's well within the normal range, but it's where most young, lean, active people run. And mine has been, I've been keeping mine there for years, but a month or two ago, my wife and I were out on the trail. We were taking our evening walk, and we walk for an hour or so every evening, just hold hands and talk and kick around our day, and she tells me about her day, and I tell her about mine. But as we were walking along, 4 young men from the local college track team came running towards us in their shorts and no shirts. And I looked at these young men with their absolutely rock-hard, flat 19-year-old bellies, and I said, damn, that's a belly I want. Now, my belly's pretty good, but, you know, not that good. So I decided I was going to take off that last 3 or 4 pounds and get that belly for myself. But I couldn't get it to go. And I went and I checked my TSH, or I had Samira check my TSH, and I had drifted up from my standard about 1 to 2.4, more than twice what I like to be. So I raised my thyroid level a little bit to get my TSH back down to 1, and those pounds coming right back off. Okay. Now, So, you know, it helps. It raises your metabolism, so you burn more calories from the same activity. Because I already tend to be more active. I don't know how to get that much more active. I just needed some help to burn more calories while I was doing it. Samara, you have a little tale.
I know. Yeah, I, you know, the team has been wanting me to get my labs done for a while, and I keep getting this. In fact, it became a joke in the office. Everybody in the office was, when are you drawing your blood? And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't go anywhere. I finally did do it, and I'm actually really glad I did it, because some of my labs were off too. Even though I'm, you know, I'm providing information, I'm tracking things for patients, my TSH actually went up to 6.3.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And it was like, okay, well, that explains a lot.
Yes. Because, and for everybody, I want to use Samara in some of the video films and stuff. And the camera always adds 10 pounds. And so I was saying, Samara, my dear, I need you to get as lean as possible so that the camera, when it adds its weight, you're still going to look hot. And so.
Camera doesn't lie.
And so, you know, she's now raised her thyroid hormone to get her TSH down.
That's right. That's right. I actually mentioned to Dr. Brazel here, and then she was very kind enough, and she said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And so, yeah, just like I take care of you, Jerry.
I had to wait for you to ask.
Yeah, she took care of me. And here we are. And actually, you know, I was telling Dr. Brazel the other day in the office that I've noticed a visible difference in my personality. It just kind of woke me up, and I didn't realize what was dragging me down. You know, you just go through your workday and you don't pay attention to it. And again, for me, the lesson here is that I'm in the business. This is my business. Yes. And still, these things can happen. They slip.
I like to compare the thyroid as the thermometer of the body, or maybe more like the thermostat. It kind of goes up, it goes down, it reads the room. What am I doing for food and sleep and stress and toxins? So you can chase your thyroid hormone values with medicine, but you still have to do the work.
Yes.
So if you're not exercising, the weight's not going to come off by itself. If you're not sleeping, it's not going to compensate for your brain fog. You still have to do those things. But that TSH going up is telling you you're stressing out your body, making more demands on it. So you have to respect it, but also support it. And sometimes straight up hormone replacement, like thyroid medication, is the answer.
Right.
And so little adjustments are very good. But for some of our patients that are older, over adjusting because they don't have enough energy can lead to some heart stuff. So we
Indeed.
Do have to be careful that every lethargy is not responded to with more medication.
Well, again, we're back to Dr. Mixon's first rule.
Yeah.
Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt.
Yeah.
The proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job.
Right.
And if you don't measure, you don't know.
Indeed, indeed. I get it. And I'm happy to use myself as an example. But, you know, to your point, Dr. Brazel, the overdosing, sometimes thyroid doesn't fix it all. And, yes, we can provide the tool. But you really have to go out and do the work yourself to see the benefit. So when I replace hormones, I'm expecting my patients who are now using that functional medicine approach, changing the diet and lifestyle, to see the results and the benefits of the hormone replacement therapy. It's not like, oh, I'll use the hormones and I'll be better. You have to work at being better and it'll become easier. So similarly with the thyroid too, again, we're always trying to make sure we get you to your optimal, but overcorrecting is dangerous. Not just cardiac palpitations, but bone demineralization is very real, and you have to explain that to your patients, that just pushing more thyroid is not the answer for everybody.
No, it's not.
But clearly a TSH of 6.3 is like, okay, girl, you need to do something.
Dr. Mixon had mentioned before about some of the autoimmune disease. There's autoimmune thyroid disease.
There is.
Putting more hormone in is important. Certain types of hormones do different things in the balance, but overcorrection can cause some of the side effects we don't like osteoporosis and hair loss, which is a big complaint for many sure. of our older yeah. patients, particularly ladies.
Although with thyroid and hair loss, it goes both ways. Yeah. Low thyroid causes hair loss, and high thyroid causes hair loss.
Yeah.
So you got to stay in the
it's
middle.
It's not a more is better every time. That's very right. subtle. And that's going back to the other things that contribute to the stressors.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And for thyroid being, you know, an autoimmune disease, we do measure more factors than just the TSH. So for a thyroid panel in our clinic, we always look at TSH and your free T3 and free T4, and sometimes they will direct our course of therapy for you. So we're looking at the actual hormones that are performing function, not just the screen, which is the TSH.
That's right.
And normally they go hand in hand, but sometimes they don't. And in those cases, we use our clinical judgment and or we will measure antibody levels, which will also tell us whether you have active autoimmune disease related to the thyroid gland or not. And if you have one, then you are prone to more.
Yep.
And like other glands, our thyroids become senescent over time. Mm-hmm. And so then there's all the other supports that we have for anti-aging that might come into play, like adrenal support mm-hmm. or anti-inflammatory, so that it can function better.
And anti-senescent cell therapies.
Absolutely. We have every expectation that there should be some positive response to your treatment because mm-hmm. the cells can now absorb them and respond appropriately.
Yep.
More medicine, if it's just bouncing off those receptors, isn't going to work for you.
That's right.
All right.
Okay. Hey, we have all phone lines open. We'd like to take your call right now at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. The number to call with your question for Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, or Dr. Brazel, also in studio this week. Leading Edge Medicine brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. We'd love to take your call right now. 800-465-8770. Back with more in just a moment.
You can't hide your lying eyes. And your smile is in this.
Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, and Dr. Brazel, all standing by to take your call right now at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. During the break, we were talking about the difficulty of getting Ozempic and what is driving that. I'm type 2 diabetic. I've been on Ozempic a couple of years now, but half the time I can't get it. It's on back order everywhere. Every pharmacy says they don't have it.
And that's because it, as one of its side effects, causes weight loss.
Yeah.
And let's face it, America wants to be leaner because we all know we're too damn fat. And so there's an enormous number of people that are not diabetic using the drug, and it's being used so prolifically that it's all sold out. There's none left over for the real diabetics.
So are these people getting prescriptions for it?
Yeah.
To take it for weight loss?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it will cause weight loss. We know that the GLP-1 agonists are the newest wave of medications, and you start slow and you increase the dose. But what it is doing is exactly what you said for the original indication. You know, people are not getting it. Now, there are new class like Wegovy or Mounjaro that are specifically designed for weight loss. You could, for people who are looking for weight loss medication, I think if they start asking for that, maybe it'll ease up some of the demand that is being stressed on us.
And the Mounjaro is actually about 50% more effective
for weight loss,
than the Ozempic. Hmm. So, you know, it's equally good for diabetics, but it's even better for weight loss.
Yeah.
The trick is, though, it's brand new. It's still under patent, and so you can't get a generic version of it. Some of the older ones have been around long enough that you can get generics out through Canada out of India.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. And the Canadian pharmacies will carry an Indian generic version that you can have shipped down to the United States. Mm. But you have to contact the Canadian pharmacies for it. Mm. And some of the Canadian pharmacies are sticklers. They want a doctor to write the prescription who has a Canadian license, like you. No. But others seem to have their own pet doctor who will write the prescription sight unseen for Americans.
Mm.
So
Are there pill forms of this too?
There is now a pill form out, and the studies show that the pill forms work. You need a higher dose because it has to go through your gut and you get some of it destroyed by the stomach acid and so on. So they takes a higher dose with the oral pill. And I was hoping that we could get a generic oral pill made by the compounding pharmacy and save money.
Yeah, I remember you talking that you were going to get it here, maybe.
But it turns out that when he checked on it, it cost him just as much for the raw powder. So doing the pills through a compounder cost you just as much. On the other hand, maybe it could get you he can get some of the raw pill as a generic, even when they're sold out of the shots. I don't know. I haven't asked them about it. I'd have to check.
I mean, weight loss is such an important topic, right? And we have discussed this at our clinic for a long time. We have not prescribed the GLP-1 agonist as of date simply because the side effect profile is huge. And also what happens once the patient comes off of it, what is the cost of the medication and its availability. So these have been negatives that have prevented us from writing it and our patients from wanting to go on the therapies. But we are in the process of considering a weight loss program for our clinics.
Yeah.
And we will launch that once the doctors are fully trained on that. I suspect that to come out in the next 1 to 2 months.
Good.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, keep listening about it because I think it's important to do it right. I think it's important to have support when you're doing it. And it shouldn't be a quick fix. It should always be support with diet, with lifestyle, with education, with things that you can do outside of the medications because you're not going to want to stay on the drugs forever. So what happens when you come off of the drugs? What should you expect? How long should you stay on them? And should you even start them? Are there other things that you can do? And our team, our physicians have been very successful without these drugs in their weight loss journeys for their patients. And that's the whole point. We want to be holistic in our approach for long-term success. So I think that in the next couple of months, by the time we get into the holiday season, we should have a program where we can help you on your weight loss journey.
Okay, open up those phone lines at 800-465-8770. Your question about any medical issue, and we had some discussion about root canals earlier, and Ray in Bothell on line one has a question about this. Good morning, Ray.
Morning.
What's your question?
Well, you were talking about root canals, and my wife had a root canal 40-plus years ago, and recently started aching, that tooth did, and the doctor did an x-ray, and then he sent her over to a specialist because he says it's leaking and you need to know more about it. So the doctor looks at it, does a PET scan or something, and says, yeah, you're getting some erosion on the bone in your jaw, and so you need an implant. So then the doctor who wants to do the implant says, well, you got to get a full blood workup. And when that workup, the CBC came back, her white blood cell count was high at 10.87. Her red blood cell count was in the good zone, but her hemostatin was high at 46.7. But then her glucose was really high at 122, and she's not diabetic. And so the question is, should she get the implant or not? And is it are these blood returns something that should be prevent her from doing it at this time?
Okay. Well, that white count is marginal high. It basically says that she's either got a stress reaction or she's got a low-grade infection somewhere. And, of course, an oral infection, it makes perfectly good sense. So you'd want to clear up the infection before you do the implant, obviously. The blood sugar, a fasting sugar of 122, is pre-diabetic sort of range. By definition, if your fasting sugar is consistently over 126, you're diabetic. She's right on that edge, but that's only one test. and you need a consistent, you need multiple tests. Better would be to get a hemoglobin A1C, which tells you what her average sugar is running, not what this one isolated sugar is running. Okay.
Okay, so, we do have that. Let me see where I had it. Her A1C was in good range.
What is it?
What is it?
I don't. Where are your papers? I don't have. I had my own copy that I was marking up because I was doing a lot of research.
Yeah.
But all these readings are for because I just... Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah, well, the hemoglobin was...
Hemoglobin, A1C.
Right. We got to see one.
Yeah, HgA1C.
A1C was 4 something.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it's
5.5. Mm. 5.5, okay. So she's above our ideal, but she is not even a pre-diabetic range. So 5.5 is perfectly acceptable. So despite that isolated sugar, see, that sugar can go up with any stress reaction.
And bacterial infections particularly.
Yeah, right. So the fact that her white counts is a little high and her... sugar, isolated sugar is a little high. That tells me more infection than diabetes.
Well, if her where the root canal was, if that's leaking, which mm-hmm. I don't understand that, but if it's leaking, would that mm-hmm. indicate that she has an infection?
Yeah, it certainly could be, yes. Yeah, the root canal could be the source of the infection. Well, again, if they're talking about an implant, what you'd probably do is you take out that first tooth,
right?
Treat it with antibiotics, clear up the infection, and then put in the implant.
Yeah, they may give oral antibiotics plus oral rinses.
Yeah,
it's usually a multi-stage process.
And the implant is multi-stage, like Dr. Brazel mentioned. It's not like you go in once and you get it done. They have to look, they prep, and then they bring you back in after it's ready for the implant. And then the cap takes a while. It's expensive and it's long.
Yeah. But most people realize the first thing they'll do is to put a titanium post,
a
metal post down into the jaw, into the bone.
That comes, I think, stage 2 or 3 of that. Yeah.
First, they have to make sure it's all ready for that.
Yeah, the area is not infected and is healed in, and there's good solid bone there. And then they put in the post, and then once that heals, then they put on the cap.
If she's losing bone, then they might even do a bone graft for her first before they put the implant in, because they have to have enough bony support for the implant. Yep. Mm-hmm. And if she's lost that, then they'll talk to you about putting bone grafting in.
But all of that goes on hold until the infection's cleared up.
That's right.
Nobody wants to operate in an infected site.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to do a follow-up blood test because... Her primary care says, "Oh, well, you got to go see a naturopath because it's your hormones." And for us, we thought that has got to be crazy. But of course, the PRP, primary care, is they're anti-hormone. So anyway, then the naturopath says, "Well, I think you got parasites. That's why your blood count's up." And so we're getting really confused here. But the doctor who's do the operation says mm-hmm. he looked at all the information and he says it looks to me like your jawbone is going to be great. We'll know for sure when we get in there, but we don't see a problem with you having to have a bone graft. At least that's what it looks like at this time. So would he be the one that does, that makes sure that all the infection or whatever it is gone?
Yeah. Well, the dentist, whoever's going to do the surgical procedure, is the one who makes the final decision that everything is where they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because the surgeon is the one who's going to take the rap if things go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to make the final decision of when they work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay. So... I guess the question is, if there's a new blood test and the white blood count is still up, although you said mm-hmm. that stress could cause that, and my wife gets stressed real easy.
We'll start with blood tests.
Beg your pardon?
Start with the repeat blood tests. Okay.
Right.
Whenever you get a blood test that says something is wrong, give it a little time, repeat the test. Okay. Our bodies are pretty darn good at cleaning up whatever messes we get them into. And so quite often you'll have something, your body will clean it up on its own, and you repeat the test, and it says, oh, guess what? It's fixed. Go ahead and do what you need to do. So don't panic. Don't get too much in a dither. Just let them go back and repeat the test and see which way it's going. If the values are going up and getting worse, well, then you darn well better intervene. But if they're dropping back into the mid-normal range, you can relax and move ahead.
I have a question, if you don't mind. How old is your wife?
78. Well, 77. She's
a beautiful and young 77, wonderful. So when you're asking about hormones, back to the previous comment, is at 77, unless you're on hormone replacement, women are in menopause and have no circulating anabolic hormones that are going to build muscle and bone, and that includes jawbone. So one of the things we often find with older women who are not on hormones is they get a necrosis of the jaw a little bit more easily. Infections do a little more damage. So if that's one of the findings on the image, that she has thinner bones, the comment, go see about hormone replacement, she might want to make sure she's had her bone density scan done recently and get evaluated for osteoporosis, because that's very likely.
The other thing, too, if she is osteoporotic, she might be on some medications that could have caused the jawbone thinning in the first place.
As well. So they go back and forth with each other.
Yeah, she's been on hormone therapy for about 20 years. And she has had a bone density scan. She was on, what was it?
Fosamax
for 5 years some time ago. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, she quit after the 5 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then since then, she's not been on anything for osteoporosis. Oh, she's taking Bone Guard Forte.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, given my druthers, I'd rather do testosterone and estradiol, but that's a whole
not on the
issue.
Jaw.
Yeah, she's getting
on
that.
On the whole body.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the music says we got to go.
Okay, so, Ray,
thank you
take
for the
a break.
Call,
thank
sir.
You for
Bye-bye.
The call. Opens up a line for you at 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Back in just a moment. Shania, I guess she's starting her residency concerts back in Vegas soon.
Oh.
That might be one reason to go to Vegas. It is Leading Edge Medicine. Mark in for Lynette today and taking your calls at 800-465-8770. And we do need some calls. What's going on with the calls today? Kind of light, maybe because it's been so hot, it's finally cooling off a little bit and people feel safe to go outside. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
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 No idea.
Yeah, yesterday was quite a bit cooler than the rest of the week.
Oh, it certainly was.
And then I think today you said, Jerry, is going to be hot again?
Well, not really hot. 80.
80. Okay.
Peak of 80. So, that's warmer than yesterday, which was 76 or 77.
But, we're so much luckier than the rest of the country. I mean, you hear the news and it's like,
I know. I have friends down in Texas that send me messages every day. It's 110.
Wow.
I was in Arizona. I called it 100 and stupid.
Yeah.
Hey, Dr. Brazel, tell us what's been going on with your wrist. You've had some recent experience that you wanted to discuss today.
Well, so I had a little injury a couple months ago. I was power gardening. As you know, I like to garden, and I got a little enthusiastic, and then I went bike riding because I love to bike ride over on the Burke-Gilman Trail, and I overstrained my hand and got a little sprain. And I took care of it because I know how to do these things, and I got a little guard, but it just didn't get better because I kept doing things. while I was wearing my guard because I felt like I knew better. And so my hand sprain turned a little bit into an inflammation called de Quervain's tenosynovitis. And it's like carpal tunnel, but on the thumb side. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have chronic repetitive stress injury. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's arthritis. Maybe mm-hmm. it's carpal tunnel. But I think everyone calls carpal tunnel the catch-all sure. name for anything.
Like a rotator cuff in the shoulder.
That's right.
Exactly. It's just the thing everyone calls it, but maybe that isn't it. And it's not always arthritis. So I had an x-ray. Of course, it wasn't broken. Thankfully, I had to make sure that I hadn't done something silly because I'd gotten a little sporty that day. And then it wasn't healing as well as it should. And I like to be active in the summer. We've been waiting all winter to get outside. So it was really hard for me to not do as many things as I like to do. And so nonetheless, it got to the point where it got worse and I couldn't type my doctor notes. So, of course, when you slow down,
you had to actually dictate.
Well, I dictate, but you always have to do a little editing to make sure
it
looks pretty.
Yes,
pretty.
You do. Yeah. Those dragons don't listen to you, you know.
They don't. And so when I realized I couldn't get through a simple typing of a note without some discomfort, I thought, this is really stupid. So I went ahead and called ProLiant's Hand, Wrist, and Elbow over in Kirkland, and they worked me in right away the next day, which I got lucky. I had a slot where they had a cancellation and got me in, and I saw Dr. Galley, and he gave me the work, looked over, said this is exactly what it is, and gave me a shot,
nice.
And I was on the way. What was interesting about that is that it's very hard to get help for your hand anymore, it turns out, because it's so delicate.
Yeah.
So I'd actually called a few other people that I knew, and everyone didn't want to do it because the hand can increase your risk of injury if they put an injection in. So they'll give you all sorts of drugs at the urgent care, but they won't give you a shot in your hand. So I kept getting sent to the ER, and I thought that's a waste of time and money, but maybe not the right place. So Dr. Galley did a great job and listened and took care of it. And then the next day, I sent a smiling photo of myself to Dr. Umat. It was easier to catch up on my notes.
I got that picture, and when I was in the office, she was giving me a fake smile, and I said, I want a real smile. So Jenny took the photo and she sent it to me. I said, okay, now this is a real smile.
Anyway, so I wanted to thank Dr. Galley. Of course, he doesn't know that I'm on the radio, but he did a great job and they just took care of me right away. And it worked. I mean, this was about 2 months of things getting a little better, then a little worse, then a little better. And at some point, you just want to get back to the things you love to do. Why do we go to longevity? We love to do our life. We like to do
That's
things.
Right. We like to stay active.
That's right. And today's message is even the doctors need help.
That's right.
Yes.
Even the doctors.
Even the host.
We're human beings.
Yep.
Well,
flawed, fallible beings. And, we do our best, but...
I think my
perfect.
Patients find out that they would assume that as a doctor, I have a magic button I can press every time I have a need and I'm immediately taken care of. And one of the things that comes back to me repeatedly from my patients is the difficulty navigating the modern post-COVID healthcare system. So, of course, we all know individually the disasters that can lead to, but the frustration. So it was useful for me as a physician to see what my patients go through all
Absolutely.
The time and how hard it is to get simple care. Something that shouldn't land you in the ER for 4 hours, a couple $100 of copay, ramped up imaging over treatment, and waste of time. I mean, that's 4 to 6 hours.
And what you needed was a small corticosteroid injection.
About a 15-minute visit, 30 if your doctor's really thorough.
But Jerry, she's right in that pre-COVID, this was not an issue.
No.
She could have gotten an appointment the same day to see somebody who could have taken care of her within a week or so, right?
Yes.
Now here we are 2 months later. She's a medical provider, and she can't get in to be seen.
Yes.
And everyone's busy,
and it sucks.
So they're not turning me down because I'm trying to be pushy. It's because they just don't have the time. Everybody's overbooked, double booked.
Yeah.
And so for this particular slot, it was an emergency slot they kept open, so it was the on-call physician. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to take care of it before it became an emergency problem, and I couldn't. And I think that's what we're finding with a lot of our patients. They can get care when it's dramatic or traumatic or well past should have been taken care of preventatively a while ago. And that, of course, leads to worse outcomes for a lot of things, but also patients coming to us at Longevity and going, I don't even want to be in the primary care office anymore. And I say, well, you have to go, right? There's things we don't do for you, but we want to keep you out of there as often as possible because we know that the system can't accommodate everybody's needs anymore.
And the question is why? You know, there are no more people than there used to be.
Fewer doctors, though, in practice.
Yeah, and I think that's our issue. We've got the same number of people, basically. The population is not growing that fast, really. Yeah. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the United States, our women are not having enough babies to replace themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at just the American-born population, there's fewer and fewer of us every year because they're, you know, so we are totally dependent on immigration to keep our population even stable, much less growing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is there are fewer doctors and nurses, and part of that was because of the stupidity of our politicians mm-hmm. and their dictates that nurses and technicians and all the people that worked in the hospital had to be vaccinated or fired.
Mm-hmm.
And a fair number of medical workers, doctors and nurses, looked at that and said, I don't want the vaccine.
Like, what, 30%?
Yeah, a high percentage.
Yeah, and so they ended up laying off and firing an awful lot of healthcare workers. So now you've got fewer people to provide for the American population.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem, of course, is people put things off mm-hmm. because the medical facilities were working at bare bones levels
mm-hmm.
and they discourage you from going in. So people weren't going in to get their cancer screenings and all the other stuff. And so their diseases got worse. And now we're treating a sicker population with fewer medical workers. And doctors are so miserable in the current system that everybody who can retire is. And so the doctors and nurses that can retire are getting the heck out
mm-hmm.
because the system sucks so bad.
Well, our older, more experienced doctors who've been around 30, 40 years, who know how to take time with their patients, they've had these long-time relationships, have to adapt to the modern technology, the Medicare software requirements, integrating into a big hospital system. And they'd rather, you know, take the shingle off the door than to move into these bigger systems.
Yeah, indeed. The EMR has been a huge downfall in terms of how much time they take away from physician-patient contact and into just, you know, computer contact has increased.
But that's being driven by the fact that the government wants to know who's doing what.
Mm-hmm.
They all, because the government is paying a large percentage of the medical bills, and the guys paying the bills makes the rules. That's just a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Medicare, Medicaid, you know, all of the government programs, those government payers want to know that they're not being cheated.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to provide, quote, quality of care and avoid too much fraud,
mm-hmm.
they want to know as much as possible about every doctor and every patient in America. And so that means we all have to have electronic systems.
Mm-hmm.
But the electronic systems mean the doctors and nurses have to pay attention to the computer rather than the patient.
Well, so that was interesting. I had to fill out a form, and they said, do you want paper or do you want electronic? I said, I'm going to go electronic. But I had my one hand that wasn't working very well and the other one on the little screen trying to type it in, and I handed it back to them. I'm like, I'm going to write these by hand and you can type them in. There's no way I can fill all of this out with one little finger.
Yeah.
They laughed. But that was because I couldn't lift the sure. tablet that they had.
And I was the other day in an elevator and I saw this guy, and he was typing furiously with one thumb.
Uh-huh.
You know? And uh-huh. we're just riding along, and he's going, bah, 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 and that thumb is just moving like the speed of light. And I'm saying, how does he do that?
Yes.
You know, as an old-timer, I text, mm-hmm. but I do it with a finger, tap, 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 you know. He probably wrote 50 words in the time I could have done three.
Well, you do see the younger generation are more adaptable with their phones, but then they grew up with these phones. We didn't.
No.
We just found them and started using them. I sometimes feel bad because there's so much technology on this that could help an older person, but they just don't know how to use it. Like, you know, I'll be on the road with one of my children and they have Google telling them all the directions and everything, and it's smart, and they can then do something else while Google is talking to them about the directions. And I wish sometimes that it was easier for us older people to be able to use that same technology, because it would really help.
My Tesla just talks to me.
I don't have a Tesla. Although Tesla has become a very common car now.
In Seattle. Hey, we'll get to Mike in Seattle and Ron in Tukwila after the break. Maybe a call additionally, 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Come back in just a moment. Back to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, and Dr. Brazel in studio this week to take your call, 800-465-8770. Might be able to fit in one more call, but we do have two people on the line. First, let's go to line one, Mike in Seattle, with a question about toenails. Mike, why don't you elaborate, Mike?
Michael, I'd suggest you have 10 of them.
That would be a good suggestion, Dr. Mixon.
I think so. It's a safe suggestion.
Good guess. Okay. I have toenail fungus, and I just want to know what would be the best method of getting that removed.
Okay.
Don't cut it off.
The toenail?
Yeah.
Or the toe? Okay. My favorite method for a toenail fungus is I have the compounding pharmacist make me up a solution of one of things like terebane or one of the antifungal agents that you could take by mouth, and you simply put a couple of drops of it at the edge of the nail bed where the toenail is just growing out of the tissues. And you just put that little bit on there every day or so. Toenails grow slowly, so you have to treat it for 6 months to a year to totally let that nail grow out and replace all of the old fungus-infected nail. Because the fungus actually grows within the toenail. The toenail is laminar. It's actually laid down in multiple skinny, thin layers, and the fungus gets between those layers, and it's actually growing in the part of the nail that doesn't have an active blood supply. And that's why it's so hard to kill. So by putting the medicine right at the base where the nail is growing out of the live tissue, the new nail that grows in won't have fungus in it. But you have to wait till it's totally grown out and all the old infected nail is gone. And that can take a long time. But rather than taking pills, it's a lot easier just to put a few drops on the toenail each morning before you put on your shoes and socks.
Okay. Sounds good.
My favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work for you, Mike?
Yeah, I think that'll do. All right. Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Well, some people also talk about soaking the feet in baking soda, maybe some vinegar, or using, vinegar on the toenail.
Yeah, the trick is you got to get it into the nail, though. And that's why you have to soak and soak and soak.
Right.
Because you have to give it time. What happens is as the fungus is growing between those laminar layers,
right,
it spreads the layers. And that's why the toenail looks thick, because it's actually spreading the layers. Well, now that you've got that spread, if you soak it long enough in warm vinegar solutions and so on, that acid will be able to work its way slowly into the nail.
Right.
And the toenail doesn't tolerate that very low pH very well. But the problem is, while you clear up that first part, that area where the nail, the fungus is still very small, close to the top of the nail, it doesn't get the fluid in there very well.
Mm.
And that's why I kind of like to do that as it grows out.
Mm. Yeah, in the summertime too, I would say maybe avoid wearing socks as much as possible. Leave it open to the air.
Yeah. Although most ladies with toenail funguses don't want ugly toenails to show.
Well, they paint them.
Yeah, I was going to say just paint them.
Paint them.
Guys usually don't paint their toenails.
Most don't.
Oh,
most
don't. Well,
is that changing? Okay, moving on to line two. Ron in Tukwila, you have a question for the doctors. What's your question, Ron?
Hello, Ron.
Hi, Dr. Mixon. I have a sciatic nerve pain, and I know you've talked about Vertiflex, as has Dan Nelson, and you had the Vertiflex procedure done. Mm-hmm. I want to know how it's working for you after a year or two and where you can get it done, because I believe Dan doesn't do it anymore.
No, but it's still done at his clinic. There are some other people there who do it. But yeah, my Vertiflex is totally, I'm totally pain-free. Just absolutely 100% fixed the issue. So, you know, I'm a believer because I got great results with it. It was an easy procedure. I went in the morning, skipped breakfast. They did the procedure. I was home by 10 or 11 o'clock. I lay on the couch for 2 hours or so and watched daytime TV and was so disgusted with that, I got up and went to the office and went to work. So I took half a day off work. That was my experience with the surgery.
So why aren't they doing anymore?
Basically, the orthopedic surgeons want to do it instead of having the pain doctor do it.
So he could still go to an orthopedic surgeon and get it.
The orthopedists in the same clinic are still doing it.
Okay.
Dan just didn't want to have to fight with them about it.
Ah.
So is the Vertiflex replacing a vertebra that's been crushed or replacing the disc between the vertebra?
No.
It's like
it doesn't
a jack.
It's like a little tiny thin slide jack, and they just put it in between those spinous processes,
yeah.
And spread them open by a few millimeters, and that old calcium layers that have been laid down from the chronic inflammation are now separated, and you get room for the nerve.
Nice. So with the disc degenerating over time and the disc space narrowing, mm-hmm. you have bone on bone, but at the same time, the spinous processes in the back are also connecting to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you separate them a little bit, like a jack, then you can just allow room for the nerves to exit. Sounds without good. Changing anything
yeah.
else.
So it took a little 1-inch incision
right.
and slide it in, 15-minute procedure. Jack it open till the nerve is released. You're done.
So that's releasing the space on the nerve
right.
compression.
Yeah.
And of course, with sciatica, we don't know if it's coming from the nerve itself or the muscles around
yeah.
the nerve.
Well, Dan did a good exam, and he sent me down for nerve conduction studies.
Yeah.
So we knew where our problems were, and.
Yeah. Right, and you're right in that it will only help in that certain area. If you are getting compression down the pathway of the nerve, it's not going to help that.
Yeah.
So, you know, first diagnosis, then therapy.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, go get somebody to take a quick look and see if that's what you need. It certainly worked for me.
Thank you very much.
All right, take
okay,
care.
Okay, thanks, sir. Ron.
Bye-bye.
Question, I haven't heard your guy. I'm sure you've talked about it. What is your opinion on chiropractic for these issues?
I don't understand chiropractic very well. There's a lot of this universe exists without my approval. Yeah. So what is. The thing with chiropractic is there are studies that show people who go to a chiropractor for back pain get well faster and go back to work faster than those who see SMDs. So whatever they're doing is working better than what we do. But when I look at the chiropractors, every chiropractor has a totally different method. And some of them are doing very invasive, very hard, and some are doing these little tiny tap, tap, taps with a ballpoint pen-like sort of right. thing that can't put an ounce of pressure. And they're all getting results with dramatically different methodologies. So I don't understand the physiology of what's going on. I understand, you know, Palmer's original theory back from the early 20th century, but his theory makes no sense to me either. And certainly, I don't know anybody using his original methods anyway. So, I don't know. Something's happening. I don't have to understand it. If it works, it works. You know, universe does not wait on my approval to exist. Yeah.
I use a chiropractor regularly over here in Kirkland, Dr. Dan Prentice. He's a great, old-fashioned, I'd say, chiropractor because he spends a lot of time with the hands on the body. Uh-huh. And as a naturopath, I was trained in this. Before I went to naturopathic school, I was a massage therapist and had significant personal experience as well as working for physical therapy offices. Chiropractors have different styles, different trainings, different philosophies. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important part of finding one, other than does my insurance pay for it, is does this person align with how I feel? So if someone's pushing you into a program you don't feel comfortable with, it's just not going to work for you. I like a doctor who's a little more holistic with the body. If you have a sore foot, you're going to have a knee that's a little bit out, a hip that's a little out, a low back that's a little out. And if they don't address all of that and just adjust the foot, everything else is still going to be sore. And that's been my approach. And I see him twice a month, and I call it my tune-up, and it keeps me from feeling like I just fell down the stairs. So when I don't go long enough, everything collapses, and it keeps my joints flexible and mobile. But when things don't work, you're getting imaging. You're going to be getting a workup at a little higher order. So with back to sciatica, sometimes an adjustment's an appropriate response, and sometimes imaging is an appropriate response. But not every chiropractor adjusts you at the intensity level that you feel comfortable with. I think most people fear that neck adjustment that they see in the movies, and they do that loud sound crack in the background that makes everybody flinch like a horror movie. Yeah. And it's not like that most of the time. I don't like that adjustment myself because I have I'm easy to get out of space. So I don't need a lot of pressure in there, and he'll tap with his fingers or stretch the fascia, and that's often enough to release my neck with just a little bit of movement instead of the crunch. I'm not a nutcracker, but I sound like one when we're done.
All right. See, I don't go to a chiropractor. I just let my wife rub my back.
Yeah, neither do I. I don't go to a chiropractor either.
I love it when she rubs me. So
okay. So
stay off of the medication, which is nice because.
But you know, massage therapy is great. Yes. You know, the endorphins that are released, the relaxation on the muscle, all of it is a positive experience.
I get
no
one
matter
of those too.
Who does it.
Yes. Right. Yep.
Jury's out on chiropractic. It sounds like.
Well, yeah, like I said, something's happening, and I don't have to understand it. If it works, it works.
Okay, before we go today, be sure and book your free health analysis appointment at 866-86-YOUNG. You can also schedule an appointment at lmclinic.com, Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood for your locations for this procedure. Thanks again to the doctors in studio this week, including specialist Dr. Brassel with us. We'll see you next time on Leading Edge Medicine.